On this week's episode, the Grills discuss Disney's media role as it pertains to females. Cue the music.
Shut up and sit down.
Hello and welcome to episode 25 of Geek Grills, a podcast about geeky things hosted by women. I'm September, also known as 9 of 12, and I'm here with my co-hosts, The Jen.
Hello.
And Chris, also known as Luminescence.
Yay, I have internet back. Hello.
Terrific.
Hello. I'm so excited you have internet again.
So, girls, what have you been up to this geeky week? 2 weeks.
Well, yeah, it hasn't really been much of a geeky 2 weeks, unfortunately. I did get to have a family vacation, so I went back to Reno. That's where not where I grew up, but it's where my mom and my grandparents and my brothers live. So I got to have some family vacation time. I had the privilege of staying with my grandparents, where I got to watch Fox News and Dancing with the Stars. Yay. And the Science Channel. At least I got them to go to the Science Channel sometimes. I did get a chance to, in the evenings when I was relaxing, I did get a chance to start watching Westworld, which I'm pretty excited about. And I did finish Black Mirror, and some of those episodes, oh my gosh, I could spend hours talking about just a couple of them. They were so crazy. Yeah. Some of them were kind of unsettling. I had to like find something happy, fun to watch, because normally I have Walking Dead going on right now too. And I'm like, oh my gosh, everything I watch is so violent or depressing or dark. And I was like, I need to watch something happy and fun. So I watched Sisters, which was the Tina Fey, Amy Poehler movie. That was funny. And then I've been watching Bob's Burgers some more and just trying to find some lighthearted stuff to watch. But even Bob's Burgers has some serious stuff in it. So I've been really kind of digging to find things that aren't too serious. I did also get to start on Karazhan before I took my vacation. I did get a chance to go into Karazhan, which is a new five-man like raid dungeon, essentially, in World of Warcraft. And we got through a couple of the bosses. It was fun, but oh my gosh, it's so long. I don't know how. So I'm working on trying to get a group together so that we can consistently go in there. It's really cool to go back. It was one of my favorite raids before. And then I did get a chance to go see Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them, which was super great. So I really was pleasantly surprised by how good that movie was. I enjoyed it. I took my brothers, and we all had a lot of fun. So that's what I have been up to.
Right on. Actually, I wanted to ask you about Karazhan. There's an attunement for that. What is it? We were having a discussion in the guild last night, and I didn't know.
It's not too hard, but you have to go talk to him. You go talk to Khadgar, and then he sends you on a mission. You got to do this one dungeon, then you got to do it. You got to do a couple mythics, basically. And you do the string of mythics. I really recommend going to the Wowhead guide for Karazhan. It's got the attunement guide, and it also has a guide on each of the bosses, too. So Wowhead is definitely the way to go as far as the guides this expansion. Of course, they've been good in past expansions, but it's really been very, very, very helpful. So I recommend going there. But yeah, you have to go back and do some mythic dungeons, and then you go and you talk to Khadgar again, and then he sends you to Karazhan, and then you gotta go and do the couple quests there, and then you're attuned, and then you can go in.
Okay, great. Thank you very much. And yeah. Loon, what have you been up to?
Oh, so much geeky stuff. I finished, so a lot of this actually happened before we recorded our last episode, of which I didn't have internet, which is why I wasn't able to be there for the BlizzCon review. And as it turns out, I actually won the virtual ticket for BlizzCon from the Angry Chicken for being a patron of theirs. And I didn't find this out until last weekend. Just a few days ago. And so I'm going back and watching all of the videos that a virtual ticket person gets to see on the BlizzCon website. So that's been really cool. I've got a lot to catch up on, but I'm going to be able to catch up on all that stuff, which is really, really cool. I watched the fifth season of American Horror Story, Hotel. I was actually pretty impressed by, Lana Turner Is that, was that her name? I
think so.
I think that was her name. She decided not to continue on with the series. And if anybody's not quite sure what the show is, it's an anthology series. So kind of like Black Mirror, where every episode is different characters and different, actors. American Horror Story is basically all just contained within its season. So a season's probably about 13 episodes and it'll be different from the next season. So the fifth season is about a creepy hotel that I think was kind of mirrored a little bit after H.H. Holmes that created that murder hotel, back in the early 1900s, late 1800s. And instead of Lana Turner coming back, it was, Lady Gaga was the main character, basically. And she really, really impressed me with her acting chops. She didn't once sing in it, which, you know, wasn't a good thing or a bad thing. I thought maybe she'd try to like want to do like put that in there at some point. But that never happened. So that was a really good season. I liked it. I wasn't quite sure what was going to happen because things were new and hotel and Lady Gaga. It was good. And I also saw the first season of Mr. Robot. And the first season of Orphan Black, both of those shows, very, very good. Mr. Robot is kind of like Black Mirror mixed with Fight Club. Super cool.
Yeah, and the hard part I have is, again, that's like another thing I've been watching, and I just can't find anything that isn't depressing and dark.
I know. And I had started watching Stranger Things, but it didn't, I'm like 4 or 5 episodes in and it didn't quite grab me. So I started watching American Horror Story and Mr. Robot and Orphan Black. Orphan Black is interesting. It's not quite dark, but I'm sure it's probably going to end up getting there because.
Pretty twisted. I'd say not necessarily dark all the time.
Yeah, some of it's super fun and it's cool. And I've also been playing lots and lots of Hearthstone tournaments because I just got off of a 2-week vacation. There's this company, this group called Kyoto Esports who has like four tournaments a week. And for first place, if you win, you get 2 free Hearthstone packs. So, you know, easy, free entry, super nice people, laid back. And then I also finished the Nexus Challenge in HOTS. Thanks to one of our Patreons, Patreon supporters. And then I also started playing Guild Wars 2 again. It's been a really good 2-week vacation with internet.
Yay.
Super cool.
Also, awesome. Correction before anybody gets upset at us. Jessica Lange is the actress.
Yes. Thank you. She played Lana Turner.
That's right. That's right. Okay. And it's also Frances Conroy is the other one that's normally in the seasons who wasn't in this season either. Season 5. She's the one that played the red haired maid in the first.
Oh, that's right.
Mm-hmm. She also wasn't in this season, or in that season. I've got to check it out, though. It sounds like it's worth it. I kind of was like, ooh, Lady Gaga. I don't know, but I guess I'll give it a shot.
Yeah, it was fine. She did a really good job.
I'm a little sad that the ensemble broke up. I always, you know, well, I mean, I guess not all of it, but that it seems to be coming apart because I always thought that was a really interesting, unique aspect of that show, that it was, you know, I mean, coming from theater background and stuff, it makes me think of, you know, different shows we had done with the same actors. And it was really great to see them like stretching, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. The guy that I can't remember his name and I should, that has been in all of them.
Evan Peters, the blonde.
Evan Peters. Yes. Thank mm-hmm. you. He's still in it and he's amazing.
Oh, so I'm really behind.
He's incredible.
We're watching the season with the Roanoke, which is local for me. So anyway, have we been on since Doctor Strange? Cause I did see Doctor Strange and then I got to see Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them. And then I went to see Arrival. So I have seen more movies in the last couple weeks than I usually see all year. What else? We tried to build a computer and it's sitting here in pieces behind me because FedEx delivered the microprocessor somewhere. They kept insisting it was here and that's been a fun fight. I mean, this was,
you're like, I can assure 10 days you now. It's not here.
Yeah. Like there's another package here UPS found me. But yeah, it's really ridiculous. And the description I most recently got from someone talking to the driver, it's pretty precisely saying they went to the like trailer behind us and left it there. But I talked to them that day and they said they don't have it. So what do you do? So I got to file a claim for him. And my poor son, like, this was his birthday present. His birthday was back on the 9th. And he's been waiting and waiting. And he's got like a copy of Civilization sitting here ready to go and money to start his own Steam account and split off from his brother, but no PC to do any of it on. So geeky turmoils at the McCrady house. I guess we can move on now to the Geek Grapevine.
In essence of news, didn't somebody have a birthday? Just saying.
Yeah, and Ember's son and I share the same birthday, which is super cool.
I didn't know you guys shared the same birthday. Well, happy birthday to Lunescence. She celebrated turning 21 years old. She's going to go drink for the first time. It's very exciting.
Yes, I would not like to be that young again, but at the same time, sure, why not? Go back in time the year before I got married and not get married.
There you go.
That guy.
Different choices.
And there was a third, Chris. Somebody tweeted and tagged Dills and I, like, oh, now I'll always remember, you know, Nine Son's birthday because it's the same as mine. And I was like, well, it's also the same as Lunescence. And
so you share a birthday with another billionaire too.
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool. Okay, so that also means we share a birthday with Joe Biden.
Oh, boy.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, the lovely VP. And also Bobby Kennedy, who was assassinated. Yay.
Oh, that's sad.
I know.
Oh, my gosh. Well, I
claim to fame, I guess.
Yeah, I know. My birthday is interesting. I share a birthday with Walt Disney, so that's apropos today.
Nice.
So news-wise, in other news, so Telltale has had a very, very popular has done very well with the different franchises that are in the Telltale series. But the Walking Dead one has been one of the most popular. And what's really exciting is they finally announced the release of new content. So that'll come out Tuesday, December 20th. It'll be The Walking Dead, A New Frontier. Now this game is going to pick up after season 2. And I guess we're going to be following a new character named Javier, and there is going to be a chance meeting with the series staple Clementine. So I'm pretty excited about it. I'll put a link in the show notes to a trailer there, but it looks pretty good. I'm excited.
Oh my God. Oh my God. Oh my God. That makes me so excited. I didn't know about this.
Yes. You like the Telltale games, don't you?
Mm-hmm.
Like,
my opinion is the video games are better than the TV show, but I haven't caught up on the 4th and 5th season completely, so.
I read the comics and they're better than the TV show, but the TV show is
good. Yeah, that's cool. I'm super excited. I'll be checking that out for sure.
So in the more movies coming up, we've got, you know, all kinds of, I'm sure we're all excited for Rogue One in December. A friend of mine pre-bought a bunch of tickets, but I did hear this week too that, Emilia Clarke, Daenerys Targaryen from Game of Thrones is joining the cast of the Han Solo origin movie, which doesn't have a title yet, but I am super psyched for that one. I'm kind of more excited for that movie than I am for Rogue One. Rogue One isn't quite hyping me the way it seems to be for a lot of my fellow geeks, but
it didn't until the most recent trailer, and something in the most recent trailer got me kind of excited.
Finally grabbed you. Yeah. We will see. Okay, so another funny thing I found, and I thought there's NASA, and we'll have the link up. Really, really, it's true. I found the story elsewhere, but then I looked on the NASA site to find the origin for the Space Poop Challenge. So they need a way to handle, I mean, these astronauts in their suits are wearing diapers for like a day at a time. They're having the solid waste management issue. And there is a contest and you can win like $30,000 award for solving this problem. And on top of that being, you know, an interesting opportunity for the engineering minded, all I could think of was from, what's the show? Big Bang Theory. because in the Big Bang Theory, that's like Howard's thing and how he ended up being able to go to space because he designed a space toilet. Like, this happened in that show.
Yeah, I heard, I heard that, like, the astronauts for Apollo 11, when they got back to Earth and they were the capsule or whatever it would be called, as soon as they opened it up, it was basically just like a waft of, you know, human waste and it smelled horrible.
I can imagine.
They've made improvements since then, but the problem is that if they're outside doing long jobs, then they're just, like you said, just sitting in diaper. Not good.
Yeah. Not cool.
Also, okay, can I just say that $30,000 doesn't seem like it's cool, but I feel like that should be worth more than $30,000.
Well, it's not like you're building it.
Oh, I guess that's true. You just have the idea. Okay. All right.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know how you pay royalties on a poop suit, but...
I know. I was going to say every time. Well, you know, it's funny because, like, the first American who went up in space, when he went up, or they were getting ready to launch him up, and he was like, I have to pee. And they were like, well, you're strapped in, buddy. So he was like, all righty. And he peed, and he was like up there for like 15 minutes, and he came back down or whatever. I don't remember exactly how long, but he wasn't there for very long. But yeah, he totally peed his pants and then went up. Whoops.
Yeah, great. Have a nice trip. So everyone who plays Blizzard games has seen the Yule log that is in the launcher right now, with the Murlocs, and I love it, and it's adorable, and I do recommend just, you know, having it there in the background if you've got a spare screen, and looking over now and again. Between each song, a Murloc kind of glop, glop, glops by, along with them singing carols in just Murls. Between each song, another decoration is added bit by bit until the scene is complete. So I enjoy just having that in the background. I'll put it probably when we're having Christmas dinner, I'll have it playing in the background because it's an amusing Yule log instead of just, you know, the one on the television.
Oh, that's super cute.
This is so adorable.
Oh, that ties in really nicely with a video that I found. Do you guys know who Trade Chat is? She's the pink-haired girl on YouTube that talks a lot of stuff about World of Warcraft. Her and a friend of hers did the Pilgrim's Bounty in real life from that World of Warcraft cookbook that you have, Ember.
Cool. And
so, yeah, they did a video. This is what their Thanksgiving looked like, and everything's labeled. And these were, you know, were the recipes that they chose. And it's pretty cute. It's pretty cool. The food looks delicious.
Yeah. So I'm in a Blizzard fan person, group on Facebook, and somebody's been making a couple of the recipes from there and posting them. And it's really exciting to see the World of Warcraft food. I was at first like, World of Warcraft cookbook, this is silly. And then, but it's really cool.
Oh, actually. No, they're quite good. Like, solid recipes.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I don't know how much creative license they took on some stuff, like one of the mud pies.
Well, there's very little as far as ingredients. I mean, there are things they just have to because those animals don't exist, right? But they stayed in the same family of, like, porcine, bovine, you know, fowl and that kind of thing. And they did a lot of really, like the book starts with these herb blends, the autumnal, you know, and those ones are in the seasonal dishes, like the stuff from Pilgrim's Bounty dishes. There are Asian tinged ingredients in the Pandaren recipes, that kind of thing.
That's cool. All right. I'm going to have to check it out.
And there are drink recipes. By the way, there's a whole Way of the Tankard chapter.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, they made mulberry spiced wine, I think. Something like that.
I remember seeing Kungalooshes in there. I was like, uh-oh.
I saw the fell stew. Someone made the fell stew and posted pictures on Facebook. It looked yummy.
Yeah, there's an...
Okay, I'm sorry. It was the jungle vine wine.
Okay. And there's a fell eggs recipe, and it's like... Or fell eggs and ham.
Yeah, they did that as well.
Yeah. It's really cute. It's basically deviled eggs with a little crispy pancetta stuck in it, but they put some wasabi in, so it has some bite and it's green. Very clever.
Cool.
That's
nice.
Cool.
So I guess we are ready to move on to our main discussion of the day. We want to talk about Disney because Mickey Mouse's birthday was recently. And then do we talk about Disney women? We talk about Disney movies. We talk about how Disney affected us. So this is going to range a little bit. We have discussed among ourselves and tried to get some focus to personalize the episode as well as we can. And hopefully, all you Disney fans out there, and maybe if you even don't like Disney, you'll find something interesting in our conversation.
Don't lynch me. No, I'm just kidding.
Everyone has very strong feelings about Disney in the world, it seems.
Yeah, it really, they do. It's crazy. So I have coworkers that are big Disney fans, and it's interesting which characters they glob onto, but I've always had an interest in Disney because I share a birthday with Walt Disney. And on top of that, my grandmother, my father's mother, she used to live in Anaheim. So when my parents were divorced, my mom would be nice enough to take me to go see my grandmother, and I would get to go to Disneyland. So I went to Disneyland a lot as a kid. And then my grandmother used to collect Disney stuff, because she lived nearby and she was just, you know, intrigued. So I guess I've always had some connection to Disney, because of that too.
When I was little, my grandparents used to go and they would mail us postcards that were from Disney that were, you would color them in. They were like coloring book template postcards. And that's kind of my first memories of being aware that it was a place along with watching the show. Cause I am old enough that on Saturday you could get up in the morning and watch Walt talk about Disney World being built and, hoping they would show a cartoon that week, something animated. You would look forward to that. So, you know, that's some of my first Disney stuff. I didn't actually get to a park until I was 22. And I ended up flying there and getting a job and working there for years. So,
so I went to Disneyland when I was a child, and my father loves to tell the story. When I went to Disneyland, I decided that the people that sell balloons at Disneyland were the coolest people ever, and that is what I wanted to do when I grew up. So that was my first career aspiration, was to sell balloons at Disneyland.
Aww.
Yeah, I remember the first time that I went. My dad is from Southern California, so growing up, he lived at Disney World and Knott's Berry Farm, and because that was what you did as a teenager in when you grew up in Southern California, is you would go on dates to Disneyland, and it was just something that was super normal for somebody like him. When I think for a lot of people that don't live in the area that don't get to do that often, it's a lot bigger of an event. But yeah, I remember seeing the janitors would go around and they had their little broom and their little, you know, the stick sweeper that you hold on to, and it's got a long stick so you don't have to bend over to sweep something into it, a little trash bin. And they were on rollerblades. And I'm like, oh, so cool. Super cool. Cause at the time I was at that age where I was just starting to learn how to rollerblade. And I always thought that was super cool. I was like, I want to do that.
It's really neat. And the cast members would be very happy to hear that you enjoyed both of you as kids saying, those people are really cool, because it is a really great place to work. I mean, the brainwashing is strong. But it's cool to be able to work at a place where no matter how bad your day is, you can be like, you know what? There's like a sparkly castle in the middle and you can just go up when the guests are gone and there's magic. And I always, other cast members would pick on me for just having, you know, so much pixie dust in my hair, but they're putting on a show. Even if you're sweeping up trash, like there's this idea that's very inclusive about being part of the show and being cast. So.
Yeah, because they were always happy, and like the balloon people, like in particular, like they were smiling and happy, and it was a very big deal when I got my balloon. You know, it's just such a cool experience. Even as an adult, I think going to Disneyland, it's there's so much there. But see, that's something that Disney's always done in the movies too, which I find interesting, and I definitely want to talk a little bit about, is how good of a job Disney has done at appealing across generations. Because one of the things that I've always enjoyed about Disney movies is that I could watch them with, you know, you can watch a Disney movie with a little kid. Sure. And they're going to love it because that's like what they're supposed to do, right? It's keyed into the kids. But then parents enjoyed them too. And, you know, I, as an adult, have gone and seen Disney movies in a theater. It's very interesting how they're able to just make that broad basis and make it entertaining across those generations.
Yeah, they really master it. I think they, when you hear other people talk about movies that do that, they'll sometimes hold up Disney as like the paragon of that because they do it without it being just some kind of cheesy insider. Only the grownups are going to get this. They slide it in really smoothly.
Now, I feel like we have to, it goes without saying, we have to talk a little bit about female characters in Disney, because I think that that's, you know, that's always a thing, right? You know, little girls, oh, you want to be a princess. Like, when I was a little girl, I wanted to be Cinderella. I loved her little outfit. I was dressed as Cinderella for one Halloween, dressed as Snow White for Halloween. I loved that kind of stuff. And I loved the movies. I liked Ariel. I liked, you know, Little Mermaid. That was one of my favorites. And then of course, Beauty and the Beast came out and I'm like, oh my God, a princess that reads.
Right.
And I was reading all the time. So that was very exciting to me. You know, and it was very awesome to be like, yeah, I can be a princess and live in this fantasy world and all that. But then there's also that concern of, oh, the world is better when you get your prince kind of mentality, or the Stockholm syndrome in Beauty of the Beast, or, you know, some of the other things that happen there. That's, you know, people get concerned about that. Like, okay, they're not strong female characters, but it's also fantasy. So why does it have to be, you know, a heroine thing? Does that, you know, see what I'm saying?
Yeah. I never had a big, like, princess fetishy thing. I was very much a tomboy. Of those princesses that did exist when I was younger, Aurora I liked best because she just made more sense to me. She was the only one I related to. I always kind of had a disdain for her. And of course, part of it's probably I was brought up to like, never trust a man. So I had a disdain for like, ew, like, what do you just want to go and dress up and be someone's arm candy? It never appealed to me. And Aurora was, you know, just in it for love, and she fell in love with a boy in the woods. And what do you mean I have to go be a princess? And like, she was the only one I really related to. And then later, I mean, I was already in my 20s. I was grown when I was working at Disney when Beauty and the Beast and Little Mermaid came out, and you had some other shows of independence in those female characters. But I mean, really, when I was a little kid, Robin Hood was the thing, and there's like a tough female, you know, chicken in that who kicks butt. And I love Mary Poppins. So I had a different view of Disney role models, I guess, because of the era I grew up in.
Oh, sure. Yeah. I think Jen and I probably grew up at about the same time. So yeah, like when I was a kid, Little Mermaid was definitely, cause I remember seeing a poster in like a video store or the electronic section of a Fred Meyer's or some sort of like grocery store chain like that, that also does clothes and electronics. And I remember seeing the poster for the Little Mermaid. And I think, I don't remember, I think it came out in 89. So I was
like
eight.
That sounds about right.
I was 7 or 8, and I remember my dad, cause I was with my dad at the time, and him saying, oh yeah, that's going to be Disney's next movie. That'll probably be out by the time you're 16. And for some reason that has always stuck in my mind. I was like, oh, okay. So just, it takes a while to create these movies. Okay. So this is my kind of first concept of how much work might be put into this. And of course it was coming out that same year. So I didn't have to wait until I was 16 to see that. So, and that movie dealt with, like growing up, I was always closer to my dad. And so there was a single dad. There was a strong dad. My dad was always super strong, being a bodybuilder and, really into wrestling and sports. And so King Triton was kind of like a representation of my own father. And, I didn't have all of the siblings that Ariel had. But yeah, so that was one of the movies, like when I was a kid that I really latched onto. And then Aladdin afterwards and Beauty and the Beast. And yeah.
Oh yeah, I loved Aladdin. And I liked a lot of the music too. That was what grabbed me because I was in choir. And that was interesting to me, was that you could sing in movies and there could be songs. And I liked the music. I like, you know, music in movies. Like I think, of course, I like musicals. So, I mean, of course, it makes sense for me. But as a swimmer, I don't know, Ariel always just intrigued me, and she was a mermaid. That's cool.
Yeah, I grew up in the water as well. We had, you know, even though I'm not by the sea, or I'm not by the ocean, we do have a man-made lake that used to go out on boats all the time. And we used to have a place called Wild Waters that was right off the side of the freeway, and it was our own little water park. And then they expanded the freeway and tore that down, but they built a new one in Meridian. That's a city that's right next to us. But yeah, also like, especially during Aladdin, I was playing the violin at the time, and I bought one of those, like the professional piano vocal books for all the songs in Aladdin. And it was my first foray into realizing that you could make songs with like 10 flats. And yeah, it sounded amazing. And it was just like, oh, this is, and I, you know, I was trying to teach myself a little bit of keyboard at the time. And it's definitely not super great, but, I was able to go through and play through with my violin. And, yeah, definitely latched onto Aladdin in the musical sense a lot just because of that.
Yeah. I used to spend a lot of time singing the songs, and the exciting thing when, cause again, I was already working there when those things were released, is we were waiting for the new parade to see how that would go and the new characters.
Oh, I love
it. Oh yeah. I wanted to ask you, when I ended up going to Disneyland, it was right after The Hunchback of Notre Dame came out. And so of course the parade that would happen every hour or so, it was, and the whole park, the gift shop, everything was Hunchback of Notre Dame themed. How often does that change? Do they wait until a new movie comes out, or like how often does the theme change?
Yeah, when new movies come out, that's when they change the afternoon parades. I mean, at Disney World anyway, it's usually the afternoon parades that'll change theme. The big one at Magic Kingdom. Old habits die hard.
Tragic Kingdom.
Yeah, when you work there, it's a thing that happens. So, they have several, they'll just add it because it's a whole series of things. The one at Studios is usually centered around one movie, and they'll change that. And then the thing with the shops, they'll populate, they'll have like, the big shops have all different stuff in them, and then there are some shops that are more themed. Like when Beauty and the Beast came out, I was kind of having a fit because there's a villain's shop. It's this little shop, and they rotate it with whatever the current villainy is, you know, and whatever movie's out, it'll be dominating it. And it was full of Beast stuff. And I was,
why is he a villain?
I was like, Gaston's the villain.
Gaston is the villain.
Yeah. I was really annoyed, and I was complaining, and you know.
Weird. Yeah.
Rightfully so, complaining. You know,
agreed.
I do have to say, like, my sister, she's young. She's 8 years younger than me. And I think about the Disney movies that came out for her, you know, and I think one of the big ones is a movie that I go back to when I need to smile and I need to feel good and warm and fuzzy. And that's Mulan. That movie is so good. And it's such an example of a strong female character, I think. And I think it's, you know, it's, I mean, it's a ripoff of the Calvary Maiden, the old story, but it's so good.
Well, and it particularly points out that she had to pretend to be a man to even start. And I think that was an important point to make.
Yeah. And and of course the area that it was happening in during the Huns, that was a long time ago, a very long time ago. So just to be at least somewhat historically accurate, that's exactly what she would have to do. There's no way, absolutely no way she would be able to join as a female. But she did it for honor for her family and for her father. And I guess technically in that sense, one could argue that, well, she was also doing it for another man. You know, like if you want to go the hardcore feminist angle. But it,
yeah, let's be honest, I don't think any Disney movies are passing the Bechdel test.
Yeah. And I don't have a problem with Mulan at all. She was definitely awesome, awesome female.
Actually, I would say I think Princess and the Frog does.
But, oh, yes. Princess and the Frog is an excellent example. But also, like, why does it have to be a princess? Like, that's so weird. But anyway, I love Princess and the Frog. It's also good. And Rey is in love with the star. And that makes me I enjoy that.
Oh, why? Yeah. I forgot about that. That's adorable. You know, it's interesting when, you know, Chris brought it up, like, what were the movies during this formative teenage area? And I was like, what were Disney movies when I was a kid? Because there weren't any. They were in this drought of animated features.
Okay.
So it was all, you know, movies. And the two Disney movies that came out during that period of my life, and it was like, wow, okay, so I guess maybe still formative because I'm kind of a gothy nerd, but like Something Wicked This Way Comes was a Disney movie that had big impact on me. I was a Ray Bradbury fan to the point where I found every scrap of Ray Bradbury, you know, books and short stories and just gobbled them up at that age. Like, I knew that Something This Way Come was based on The Black Ferris, which was like published in a Sci magazine as a short story, because I was such a Bradbury fan. So I was excited for that movie. And then Tron, was another one that came out during that period of my life. And so how nerd is that?
I just think it's crazy that I still would watch like Snow White. That movie was released in 1937. That's crazy.
Kind of. Yes. Yeah. Cause that was their first feature length movie. I still to this day, unfortunately, can't really stand her voice.
I can see that.
And her like singing voice, but that was a voice of the era, which is what makes it so good. Great. I just personally like it just grates on my nerves a little bit just because it's super, it's got super weird,
that high pitched vibrato.
Yeah. Yes, exactly.
Yeah. I kind of went back and watched those later in my life. Again, when I was at Disney, there's this history of animation, attraction, and it kind of went through and made me interested to go back and watch Snow White and watch Sleeping Beauty. And that's, Sleeping Beauty is the one where the animation technology changed, where they started layering cells so that you get that depth. And, you know, so, I mean, there's a lot of techniques they invented. And, but again, I didn't go to the movies when I was really little and they were out of theaters. So.
Bedknobs and Broomsticks. I love that movie for talking about live action. Oh, and she was like a witch.
Yeah.
And that was okay. And I loved that. My grandmother and I used to watch that movie a lot.
And I love Mary Poppins so much. Oh my God. My aunt, the last birthday present my aunt ever got me was a carpet bag. And I still love that thing. I like giggle and smile every time I take it anywhere. It's like, you know, she's a Time Lord. It's bigger on the inside. And when I was growing up too, my dad was gone. He wasn't living with us, but my dad seriously was a chimney sweep for like 15 years. Nice. And he kind of looks like Dick Van Dyke and nobody else sees it. So maybe it's in my head, but I mean, I remember him going around singing Bare Necessities. He's kind of like Baloo. He's boop, 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 you know, and then this chimney sweep movie. And it just, I always associate it with my dad who was not there.
Yeah. Anything that Julie Andrews touches is gold. Yeah. Like I've heard rumors that she's not the nicest of people. You know, like she drinks and she smokes and she was doing all of that around the children during the filming of Mary Poppins. So I don't know how much validity there is to that, but, her voice is gold and she's awesome.
Votes for women.
Mary Poppins is great.
Yeah. Did you ever see the movie that they made about the making of Mary Poppins, about the writer?
No.
That's a good movie. I highly recommend it. It is the... Oh my gosh. I'm going to feel so bad. I have to say that Tom Hanks was an incredibly good Walt Disney in that movie. And it was very... I really enjoyed it.
Saving Mr. Banks. That one?
Saving Mr. Banks. Yes. Yes, that is correct. I believe that is the movie I'm thinking of.
Oh, and how funny, because it's a play on Saving Private Ryan, and it's Tom Hanks. Ha.
It does kind of, that's funny. It is good though, and it's about the making of the Mary Poppins film. And it's, as a writer, as somebody who's written before, and that creation and that process of where things come from, it was really interesting to watch. And I really think that I enjoyed it much more than I thought I would. I think I was on a plane when I saw it, so I was like, all right, whatever. But, you know, it was actually really good. It talks about the process of developing a story and how we get connected to our characters when we're writing a story because they come from a personal place, and how that can be involved in the creation process. And then, of course, there was some tidbits where, you know, they were awfully nice, of course, to Walt Disney. And I think that, you know, there's a lot of people that say a lot of bad things about Walt Disney, but that man was a unique individual, and he may have had his faults, but he had an imagination and an understanding of, he just had a different mindset. And I find that impressive.
His forward thinking views of community are very interesting too. I mean, things that we were, you know, taught when, trained there, about how Walt Disney World was built are ridiculously astounding. I mean, he was sneaking around buying up this property. Epcot is experimental prototype community of tomorrow. Things like the monorail system and, living spaces and shopping spaces being integrated into the community all on property are part of an actual vision he had. They ran out of money. They ran out of money. Those weekly TV shows showing the map of what's gonna be here was inspirational. It was a commercial more than anything. It was trying to attract investors, trying to keep people inspired. People worked without getting paid for a long time at the end of those projects because they fell in and they believed in the vision he had. I mean, he started the thing because he went to an amusement park with family, and it was supposed to be a family outing, and they all just took off in different directions. And he's like, well, wait, no, this isn't what that we're doing. And so they're very, or, you know, they used to be anyway, as strict as they can about keeping everything so that it can be done together as a family.
That's cool. I didn't know that. I'm really glad that you mentioned community, because I think that word, even if you've never been to Disney World, Disneyland, or like any of the Disney parks in Europe or wherever else they have it around the globe, I think just Disney in and of itself really is a community. So if you've seen a movie and you've really liked a movie, you're already part of the Disney community. And you can go and you could talk about it. And it's like this big giant family and community of people around animation and story and fun. And yeah, that's really cool.
There are live journal groups.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, and people, they do get really into it. You know, I have a friend who worked in, did the Disney student exchange thing for school. And then so he went back and did the Disney 5K, and they get connected to Disney. And it's an awesome thing. I think it gives us all kind of universal touch points too. I mean, those kind of movies, everybody has seen those movies, but you know, I just think about, gosh, some of the movies that I loved and they're like 50 years old. Like, how is that the case? You know, what other movies hold up like that? You know, there just really aren't a lot of movies that hold up the way that Disney movies do.
Yeah, and as we just discovered when we were originally talking about Mickey Mouse's birthday, the reason we brought this up is just because I've always known it as a trivia point because it's 2 days before my birthday. So Mickey Mouse was born November 18th, 1928. And he's 88. He's turning 88 years old this year. So, and Mickey Mouse wasn't his first creation, just the first one that became well known. And so basically Disney properties and Disney itself is about 88 years old. That is a person's life. Like, is somebody, the people that were born in 1928 are, some of them are still alive right now. You go talk to them.
No, it's like my grandmother remembers when, my other grandmother, she remembers when Snow White came out, in the theaters. She doesn't remember when it came out because it was already out when she was little. She was too little. But,
okay.
You know, that's how old some of these movies are.
I'll have to send you, speaking of old, I'll just send you pictures of, my name tags. I have a little pile of name tags I saved from when I worked there. Because I worked there during the 20th, it's 20th or 25th. See, my mind's already gone. It was an anniversary of World of the Park. So I've got name tags that say September and they have the anniversary logo on them.
Sweet.
Yeah. And then I have other spare name tags because, like, if you forget yours, there's a drawer and you can pick them. So I have, like, one that says Natasha. I got to be Natasha one day.
Nice. That's good. They didn't force you to have to use your last name.
Well, I mean, there is no last name on your name tag. Okay. And having picking Stuart might have been a little weird. I think the best thing that ever happened to me, I mean, there are so many good things at Disney. You talk about the smiles of the cast members. I mean, I was selling ice cream. And, like, you have this great training to get right down by somebody with a wheelchair and talk in their, you know, face to face with them, and you're making their day special. And then you have somebody who, you know, is a Make-A-Wish kid come up and just, like, you end up, the brainwashing is so strong. It's really good. Like, it was like, I have a chance to, like, make their day and look in the eye and they're special and just make this the experience they need for this day. And then, you know, and then they're gone. And an hour later it hits you. Oh my God, that little kid is dying of cancer. Right.
Oh,
sorry. But it was good experience. I mean, I had a little kid up to me. You get a different costume every day, depending where you're working, when you're in Outdoor Foods, which is kind of cool. And they clean them for you. Like, you drop off your dirty stuff and you get new, fresh, pressed, clean uniforms or costume. And go up there, and Liberty Square had these blue dresses with, like, a white apron, and I had black hair, and I had a crop cut, and I wore lipstick that day. And some little girl came over and she thought I was Snow White.
Oh. Yeah, Snow White or Alice in Wonderland.
That's my sister couldn't do people in costume. She used to freak out. So we went to Disney World, and of course I want to take pictures with Goofy and with Tigger and whatnot because they're, like, my favorites, and she is just screaming. She could not handle people in costumes when she was little. It's so funny how, like, some people just can't handle that at all.
Yeah, it's really interesting.
Yeah, I couldn't handle it when I was an infant, apparently. I don't know if you guys, well, everybody probably knows what Chuck E. Cheese is, but we used to have a place called Showbiz Bob that had animatronic animals. And when I was an infant, I saw those animals and freaked the fuck out. But I'm glad I grew up and got over it. But as a baby, nope.
I so heard Sideshow Bob when you said Showbiz Bob, and everyone, now that all the animals have the voice of Kelsey Grammer, and I'd be creeped out too.
Oh, that'd be awesome. Yeah. Yeah. Showbiz Bob was just kind of like the characters actually in Showbiz that were there, the animatronics, are actually featured in a MGMT video, one of their first ones. So I was super excited to see that because my childhood just came rushing back to me because they've got this big giant gorilla playing the guitar or the keyboard, and you've got this surfer dog playing the guitar. And yeah, that was cool. But that's, I don't think Disney, but yeah, just did Disney end up getting into animatronics at any point? Or was that more of like a Jim Henson thing?
No, animatronics. Oh,
you got the Country Club Bear show.
Yeah, the Bear Jamboree. They actually, I think they invented the term. They also, you may not know, invented fiber optics. The Imagineers at Disney.
That's cool.
But you have the, what's the one with the birds? The birds are all animatronic. The bird one too. And then of course you have the Pirates of the Caribbean.
Yeah. Okay. Well, and that reminds me that I don't know why that reminds me, but, did any of you guys go on the Haunted Mansion ride?
That one was my favorite. I loved it. Well, apparently because of the holograms. That was like my second favorite.
That was
The hologram technology, because that was made back in what, the 70s maybe? Maybe 80s? I don't know. But yeah, like the holograms in that ride were freaking fantastic.
Yeah, that was really amazing.
You're sitting in a little cart, and all of us, like the cart turns, and you're basically looking at a mirror, which shows a hologram of a ghost right next to you, but you can only see it in the mirror. You look over, there's no ghost, but in the mirror, there's a ghost, and he's just all grinning and laughing.
Well, in the ballroom, I mean, that's just a fantastic scene. The, mansion is one of the most envied attraction rides in Magic Kingdom. And the costumes. Okay. I had a guy who had a crush on me who worked there, and he gave me got a hold of a costume piece somehow. I've got like one of the little maid looking hair bows, but the bow is a bat.
Bow is a bat, like a baseball bat? Oh no, a bat bat, like an animal,
like a spooky bat.
Oh, cool.
Let me see here. Lucky the Dinosaur, free roaming and audio animatronics at Walt Disney World in 2005 was the first one to walk on land. Found that.
Cool.
You know, I have to say I really liked Frozen too. I was really impressed by it.
Well, yes, and their formula, I definitely wanted to talk about Frozen a little bit. The formula they used for Frozen is the first time they've ever attempted it, and the sales for the movie skyrocketed. Like, it was huge, and it's because it's the first time it was ever represented that Disney princesses didn't go for the guy. They went for family. They went for each other, and you know, like the guys that the ladies met were kind of, they were very, very important characters, but they were kind of ancillary in the sense that Anna wasn't going to go ahead and choose, Lars or whatever his name was, like the snow trapper guy. She ended up choosing her sister. And so it was like a kind of a woman empowerment movie. And it was the first time they had ever tried it. And it was a formula that worked really, really, really well. And I remember seeing arguments online about how, okay, that formula worked really, really well, but they're not continuing with it yet. They're not going to make another movie where it's about sisters yet. So I guess we'll see in the future if they do that.
What I liked about it too was the music was just so good. Oh man. The music was good, and it was, you know, about these sisters. And like you said, it's just a kind of a different approach, I think.
Well, the not being rescued.
Yes.
Although Princess and the Frog kind of had that too, but maybe not as strongly as approaching love, true love being familial as Frozen did.
Right. Yeah.
That's true.
Yeah. Well, and yeah, like when it came to the music of Frozen, I didn't see Frozen when it first came out. I didn't see Frozen for a long time after it came out, or what felt like a long time, but just because Let It Go went viral, I knew all about that song, but I didn't know where it fit in the story until I actually watched it. So it was, the music in that movie went viral, and people kind of already got a sense of what the movie might be like just because of the music alone, which was fantastic.
And it was funny because it was written by Jennifer Lee and her husband, and my maiden name is Jennifer Lee. So when they won an award, when they won an Oscar for it, it was like, oh, Jennifer Lee won an Oscar. And I was like, and all my friends were like, way to go.
Like, yeah, good job.
Did your Google alerts go crazy? You were all over the news.
It was pretty nutty for a little bit. But, you know, and I think it goes without saying, we do have to talk a little bit about, I mean, I don't want to, but some of the stories and some of the things that come from Disney are not so great. There's definitely the whole, like, oh, everything's fine if a prince comes and rescues you. You know, that whole thing, that is rough. There are some stories there that are concerning as far as building up young women. I think, Lunessence, if you put this link in there to the Cracked article with the five lessons that the five awful lessons
that Disney teaches you about relationships, and some people absolutely hate Cracked. I've been hearing a lot of talk that Cracked used to be a lot better several years ago. But every once in a while, I still listen to their podcast. Their podcast is actually really great. It's really good. Yeah,
and I think once in a while, like there's, and there's a ton of these articles that you'll see about how, oh, and by the way, this is what Disney, like, this is why Disney is bad, or this is why, you know, Disney princesses. Also, if you get a chance, look at the Disney princess rap battle with Sarah.
Oh, yes.
Miller. Worth it.
And was that the one where right after they acquired Star Wars stuff, the rights to Star Wars, is Princess Leia in that one?
I think there is one. Yeah, those are funny. You should always watch those. But yeah, this article. So like, you know, the five awful lessons Disney teaches you about relationships. Like number five, any single woman older than 30 turns into a twisted monster. And it's like, yep, that whole spinster thing. But it's not like Disney invented that. That's been an archetype and a thing in literature forever. And that's the other thing too, is that some of these things, they're not new.
Yeah, it really seems like cherry picking to make a point.
Yeah, exactly. You know, young love is best and most pure bond you will ever have. Sure. You know, again, these are all things that are come from the old grim fairy tales. And then, of course, there's that whole thing where people are like, oh, Disney just riffs off old stories. And it's like, yeah, that's what they do. That's what creators do. That's what, you know, yes, these are archetypes. Like, these are stories that have been around for a long freaking time.
I mean, I'm looking at this article and the part of a point they're making is that these, you know, young women with traumatic childhoods, that's all they know about how to interact with other people. What? Wait, I don't know if escapism is completely to blame or the fantasy material saw.
Yeah, and a lot of the times when somebody's writing for Cracked, they are just trying to make a specific point or just like a specific focus, or they're just, you know, they're trying to make an article that's entertaining, and so they might not necessarily, whatever they're writing about, they might not necessarily be their view. They're just trying to find things that, all right, this is possibly what this might be. I know for Tangled, I ended up seeing Tangled a long time ago. I think that was Disney's 50th full feature animation movie. And it didn't really catch on. It didn't really grab me the first time I saw it. And then I saw it a second time and a third time and a fourth time and a fifth time. I was like, oh my God, I'm in love with this movie. And it's very, you know, it's very, it hits all the tropes. It hits, you know, the girl locked in the tower. She escapes. There's a dude, and they end up falling in love. And she's going to try to find, well, she finally ends up realizing that she's actually the lost princess. So she finds her parents in the castle, and now she's the princess, and she marries the guy. And
they give him
the story itself.
They give him the redemption story in that.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Cause he's a thief, and he just tried to steal her tiara or whatever, and ended up finding her there. And yeah, he's the one that I guess kind of gets to choose. Well, cute young girl. She's now the princess. I could be a rich guy. But it wasn't about that. They did end up marrying probably for love, but.
Well, yeah, I think there was something at the end, wasn't there, where she had to, there was kind of like a, well, he's not royal. And somebody was like, well, that's not why you should get married. Doesn't that happen? Or am I thinking of?
Right.
Yeah.
Well, they did that in Aladdin as well, because Aladdin wasn't royalty. He just pretended to be a royalty. And maybe that was one of Disney's first films. I'm not quite sure. I could be wrong. Where like Jasmine was the one that was upset about the law of the land, where by her 18th birthday, she had to marry somebody. And she was, you know, she was the one throwing temper tantrums, technically, for like, this rule is stupid. I don't want to marry anybody I'm not in love with. And
it's funny because like, I was just thinking of Brave, and that's like her story. She doesn't want to marry dude.
Which did come out after Aladdin. But yeah, it was set in the 14th, 15th century. So technically came before. Well, actually, Yeah, I guess that came before Aladdin. That was, I don't know.
No, Aladdin was like 90s, and then Brave came in 2012.
Well, yeah, I mean like the setting of the movie itself.
Oh, yeah, no.
So like ancient Arabia. I don't know. Actually, I don't know. First time I've ever thought of the era.
And let's be honest, Robin Williams. Oh, God, rest in peace.
So amazing.
So sad. I loved him in that movie. So good. The genie's amazing. The music, so good. And the comedy and everything. And again, the layers. I can still go back and watch that movie. You know, I was thinking of one of the other go-to movies that I watch when I need like a minute. And that's The Emperor's New Groove and Hercules. Those are another couple ones that I watch. And it's funny because they're not princesses at all.
Wasn't Meg a princess? Wasn't she? Or was she just Meg?
No, she was just Meg and her, and her lover. It was a whole thing. And then she ends up working for Hades and.
Yeah, mythology.
Yeah, because she has.
Animal.
Yeah. Because she had that one song that was. I'm not going to say it. I am not in love. And the muses are like, come on, honey, you admit it to yourself. She's like, no, I'm not going to say I'm in love to this hunky demigod. Not going to say I'm in love.
Oh, and I like how Zeus and his wife are just like all good and everything. And like Zeus is like super, like he's just, you know, totally doing what he's supposed to do. Sure. Unlike the actual mythology.
Right.
Like,
oh, I know.
Sleeping with human women left and right and making demigod babies all over the place.
Well, and I think Hera even got to have her own fling at least once with somebody else.
Yeah, I think that's true.
By the way, 1001 Arabian Nights is set in the Caliphate area, which is like in the 600s. So,
yeah, that's older than Brave. Okay, cool.
Given if we're saying. If Aladdin and Ali Baba and the, you know, 40 Thieves are in the same era, that's about when it would be. So.
Yeah, I'm thinking way back then, I don't think Jasmine would have had a choice. But since it's Disney-ized, she gets to have a choice. And they get to change the law of the land, which is cool.
I don't know. We're also looking at things like Persian and Egyptian cultures at that time. I mean, thousands of years before they had matriarchy. I mean, women were making all the decisions, beheading people.
That's true.
Yeah, that's true, huh?
It's basically all over the place. Yay, Disney. No.
We like Disney. I think overall, I think they've done a pretty good job of early representations of strong women. I mean, yes, there are the fetishy, fantasy, princessy things that can be written off and just, oh, look, it's just pretty. But for the most part, somewhere in the story, there's a strength and a denial. I mean, it seems to happen every time.
Yeah. Do you guys want to talk about the Pixar theory? And the reason I bring this up is because it starts and ends with a woman, and one woman in particular.
Sure. How about you hit that as we wrap this up?
Okay. So the Pixar theory, if you don't know, I know Pixar wasn't originally Disney. When did Disney acquire Pixar? I don't remember when that happened. But regardless, Disney ended up acquiring Pixar. So now Pixar is Disney.
I think maybe Pixar was kind of always
2006. No.
Oh, 2006. Okay.
Oh, okay. And a lot okay. Later than I so thought. Yeah, a lot later because Toy Story came out 2000. Oh God, really?
Yeah.
Oh wow. Okay. Yeah. Okay. So. 99. So their first few movies were not Disney yet.
No, they were not.
So the Pixar, theory is a theory that, all of the Pixar movies are contained within a single universe. And there's also theories with, Disney movies, like the cartoon movies as well. But just basically, in PixarTheory.com, you can go there. It's not updated with the brand new movies that are just coming out or just came out. But basically it starts with the movie Brave, which happened in the 14th to 15th century. And it starts with Merida discovering the Will of the Wisps, which is magic. And she, the magic turns her mother into a bear. This is why magic or this is why animals and inanimate objects in the future, in future movies, are able to behave like humans. So brooms and tools and things like that. which were, and that magic came from this witch who mysteriously vanishes through wooden doors. This is important to remember this for the end. And so then it goes through a timeline of, the next movie would be The Incredibles, which apparently, I guess, was happening during the 1950s and 60s, which I never caught on to. The Incredibles, I love that movie so much. I didn't realize it was actually set in the 50s, 60s.
Yeah. I
thought it was modern.
That site too, how you'd posted it last week in the notes, and I was looking, or somewhere, and I was looking in the notes, and when you click the button and it reorders things, because like it's got them listed as how the movies came out, but then it reorders them into this timeline to fit the Pixar theory.
Yeah, exactly. So obviously this is an exercise in somebody trying to make a theory work. It might not necessarily work, but there's enough clues to be just like, I wonder, I think all of the Pixar movies are contained in this one universe. And so it goes on to The Incredibles. You can click on each individual, like bubble and see more details of the stuff. And then it goes to Toy Story. And we know that toys can be animated objects animated objects because of the magic that happened with the witch in Brave. And then it goes to Toy Story 2. And then, 2003, Finding Nemo. Obviously Finding Dory would come like right after that, which I still haven't seen. Have you guys seen Finding Dory?
Not yet.
No, I didn't really want to.
I hear it's amazing.
I know. I've heard good things. I haven't gotten to it. I think it's at the Redbox. I might go grab that. But yeah, I love how they approach the sentience of the animals. I mean, everything and of vehicles. That's a little dystopian. Holy crap. The cars thing kind of freaked me out.
Once you get to there, but like right after Finding Dory, there's Ratatouille. So you've got, Remy, who's also a rat and one of Jen's dogs.
yes, even though my Remy is named after Gambit, but yes.
Oh, okay. Nice. Yeah, Remy's a rat that realized that when you put cheese and strawberries in your mouth, there's an epic flavor thing that goes on. So he develops a fine palate for cooking, and he's a rat that can cook and helps a human to cook. And then 2010 is Toy Story 3, and then 2011 to 2016-ish, Up happens, where...
I love that movie.
And so there's another thing. Up, Finding Nemo, these kinds of movies, the first 5 to 10 minutes is this dramatic, heartfelt, bawl your eyes out scene that happens. And then the movie starts and you're just like, oh my God. And
it's usually something tragic. A baby.
Right? I cried with Nemo. I cried with Up as well. It was just,
The end of Toy Story 3. Holy crap.
Yes. Oh my God. I bawled my eyes out.
I gotta watch it. I know I'm behind.
You haven't seen Toy Story 3?
No.
Okay. So no spoilers, but oh my God.
I caught part of it like a couple months ago. It was on the TV. I just turned on the end and it made me bawl again.
Well, yeah. And even right before the end, there's another scene where I bawled my eyes out because I'm like, oh my God, Disney's going to go through with this. Oh, are they actually going to do it? Yeah. So Toy Story 3, great. For all of the faults for Toy Story 2, I guess 3 makes up for it. But yeah, so after Up, you get to about 2100 to 2200 where this is the era where humans are no longer on Earth because they basically already took off into space so that WALL-E could be set up as a movie. So all that is kind of really left are animatronic cars. And this is why cars are sentient. There's no more humans around. So cars are now there. Cars are now like the new species. And then Toy Story 2 or, Cars 2. So I would assume Cars 3 would come out right after that. Cause that's coming out soon.
There's a flaw there. Cause there are people in the Cars movies.
Is there? Okay. Let me click on that thing. So what they're describing is when, for cars, when animals rose up against the humans to stop the pollution, the earthly pollution, the machines saved the humans and they won the war.
Okay. So they're dominant.
So basically cars saved us. Yeah. So however, since machines helped humans win, it tipped the balance on Earth. So machines had to send the remaining humans off into space. Oh, okay. So it's basically the cars that sent the humans off into space. So all the other machines were left behind to populate the world and run things. Interesting. And so then WALL-E happens at about
the robot Jesus.
Right, about 2800 to 2900. And then Ants happens. I forgot that Ants was Pixar's first movie. So 2898 to 3000.
Wait, you mean Bugs
and
Life?
Then A Bug's Life. Yes, I'm sorry. Ants was DreamWorks. Yeah.
Yep.
And then Monsters, Inc. happens in about 4500 to 5000 the year. And then Monsters University, 4500 to 5000. And what is important about Monsters, Inc. is Sully accidentally had a kid that they nicknamed Boo. This young little girl came into the monsters world. She escaped through the little door that they used to scare children in order to harness the power of fear in order to run, to have the energy to run their world. And so the Pixar theory is basically stating that Boo, once she got returned to her original bedroom, her original life, the human world, because at this point, all the humans returned back to Earth. So 2000 years later, I guess things probably just repopulated. And so humans were now living on Earth again. So we're going to have to go with that to make this work. But she became obsessed with trying to find Sully again, and she knows that she can find the monster world through doors. And so she basically invents, she tries to go on a mission to basically invent time travel, and she figures out how to time travel. And time travels through all of these universes until she ends up back in the Brave World, where at this point, now she's an old lady who is the witch that, that Merida encounters, who all of this time, she's the one that actually technically brought magic back into the world in Brave. So it's this big giant circle. All because she was trying to find Sully. Yeah.
You can find all that at PixarTheory.com.
I was trying to find this thing about a Disney thing that was in an article, and I'm trying to find it and I couldn't find it. The Pixar thing made me think of it.
Is it like the, apparently the ship that, Anna and Elsa's parents were on from Frozen that sunk and killed the parents was like one of the ships that Ariel from Little Mermaid found.
I remember seeing that somewhere.
There's like a bunch of stuff like that that's going on too. It's just the animated, the non-computer animated movies.
Yeah, there's a ton of theories out there about like just so many different interconnections in the Disney world and whatnot. And like you said, though, Nine, I think a lot of times, sometimes it's just like, let's make it fit our theory.
Yeah. Yeah. It's definitely, sometimes it's reaching, but it's like, okay, this is the point I want to make. So I'm going to try to make it so that it works.
But it speaks to being immersed and inspired by the stories. So, you know, why not have your fun?
Yeah. The Disney community thought of this and was just like, okay, I'm going to run with this. Wait a minute. This is actually kind of working. I need to tweak this and this and this. But when I do that, it kind of works. And then they put it out on the internet and other people can poo-poo it or yay it. And
terrific. Well, I think we've done a great job covering Disney. We didn't even get lost in like trying to cover 88 years of shit.
I know. It sounds like we're all Disney fans too.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, for all their faults, I have to say I'm a fan, and I still have pixie dust in my hair. I haven't been back in about 5 or 7 years, but I still just love it, and they treated me well. So what are you most anticipating right now, girls?
Yeah, Lynn, what are you up to?
More DHL, for sure. And it's still only November, only it's almost over. I don't know where the hell this month went.
How many matches in are you?
Sad. Two. So this is the third week.
Yes, third week.
Oh,
and you play Dills this week.
Oh, I do? Yay! I get to get owned by Dills. Yay! Okay, so there's my first loss. That'll be fun. That's fine. I was wondering if like last time would ever get to play Dills, and I didn't, and so so now I do. I did mention to Dills and Dano, the other guy that is in charge of operations for the Dills Hearthstone League, if they had ever or if they would consider like themed Hearthstone League stuff, because a while ago we did one of those pauper tournaments. I was like, would you guys consider a pauper version of a Hearthstone Deals League? And he's like, sure. We might have another one of those. That'd be great. And so maybe some of the Deals Hearthstone League stuff will be themed in the future. So that'll be fun. Looking forward to Taco Fall, which is going to happen December 10th so far, unless that date changes. And what else is going? The Hearthstone expansion, for sure. That's coming out sometime in December, hopefully the second week, maybe. Because I know I could definitely use a card influx. And I've got 2,600 dust ready to go to be able to craft my first legendary that I see that I really want. So
cool. Yeah, I'm looking forward to playing some more Hearthstone. I've been playing quite a bit. I'm actually excited about the expansion too. I hope it comes out soon. I've got my birthday coming up on the 5th, so that's in like a week. So I'm looking forward to that. Cool. And I'm going to hopefully get a chance to play some WoW and some Heroes, because I've got to do the Nexus Challenge. And I bought StarCraft, so I'll be playing that some.
Awesome. My son was saying he thinks he wants StarCraft for Christmas, so that'll be...
I bought it on a special they had last week.
Ah, that might be why it came to his mind.
Yes, I got all the Blizzard, like, this is the one thing you don't own! You should buy it! So I did that.
Well, I'm looking forward to, well, hopefully we can play together, Jen, because I only have 3 of my Nexus matches done for Heroes of the Storm. It was like, middle of the night, drunken billionaires run. So.
Well, and the patron that helped me get the 30 matches. It only took about 3 hours.
It was Macchio, I take it?
Like, no, it wasn't. And by the way, I got confirmation from him directly, because I was helping him out with a couple games. It is actually pronounced Macchio, but he just lets it slide.
Okay.
Because he doesn't really care. But yeah, I didn't know that either, because I've been calling him Macchio as well. Our patron, Grizz, he helped me to get them through AI battles that are set on the easy setting. And then like the matches are like 5 minutes to 10 minutes long, and you could hit them out pretty fast. So yeah, if you're on and I'm on, I'm willing to help you out too. So we got it all taken care of. And now I've got really cool characters that I never had before.
Yeah, right on. My son played,
and by the way, I had
his just to get the Oni mask, because he doesn't care about Heroes, but he plays Overwatch.
Well, yeah, but you guys, does he have Overwatch on the computer?
Yeah.
Okay. So like for your account, can you transfer over the Oni stuff over to your Xbox Overwatch account?
It's linked to my Battle.net, so.
Okay, good. Yeah, I was wondering about that. I was like, is there a disconnect there? Like, are people that are going to do this and have that, is that not going to work?
No, because when I bought the Founders Pack thing, I was able to, you know, put the codes in and this and that, and it crosses over. It is the Xbox account is linked to my Battle.net for my whatever. Like, my son played, but he played on Fletcher's Xbox account, and that wasn't attached to my Battle.net, and I don't know. But whatever. Yeah, there's a way, and I'll get the stuff. I'm also looking forward to getting my Szechuan peppercorns, my blue cornflower petals, so I can make that autumnal herb mix in the WoW cookbook. Those recipes, like, it seems the ones I really, really want to try right away. I'll have that herb mix, and I was missing and couldn't find some ingredients. And I'm looking forward to making some Yule gifts with it, because I know at least one person out there who should be getting, I know she wants the WoW cookbook for Christmas, and I'm going to have to poke her husband and say, you know, she wants that, because boys are dumb when it comes to present buying, in my experience, and I don't want to mix up her little jars of herbs and have her have no way to use them, so...
I know that's mean to say, but I agree as well. I once got a birthday present from my ex-husband for a 19-inch computer monitor. Like, that was his love gift to me. And I was just like, ugh.
Yeah, I remember when my sister first expressed wanting.
I don't feel special.
Yeah. I remember my sister first expressed wanting some kind of, like, at least a friendship ring. I think it was 10 or years or so into the relationship she's in. And, he got her car speakers.
Yeah, I get it, practically,
and not.
Yeah,
yeah,
and that's not a bad thing. It really isn't, but it's Yeah, when you're having that special day, and that does not mean – that's not a period reference. But when you're having that special day, it's your birthday or an anniversary, you just – you want something that is reminded of why your relationship is special. So just for the guys out there, that's why maybe a girl doesn't respond to a practical gift very well. Not necessarily that you're wrong. It's just – I don't know. It's a girl thing, I think.
I don't know, because there I like practical gifts too. My mother is all like against practical gifts. She thinks it's just wrong. But sometimes, I mean, I really, really wanted a food processor because that makes my life easier. And I'll give my husband a pass on. I mean, sometimes he's bad with gifts just because, well, he forgets, and so he makes some shit up on the fly. And other times, I got a, you know, surprise, go to this address, and I got a massage certificate, and he had somehow snuck over like a basket with candy and crap, like to be in the room when I got there, like took off work early and did that. So, I mean, it can be done.
Aww.
Just if they remember to put any thought into it other than, I don't know, what do you need? So.
Yeah, or a gift certificate. I've gotten that before. Like, hubby's like, here's a $50 gift certificate to GameStop. Well, you got the place right. Thank you. I will go ahead and buy that video game that I want.
At the end of the day, be thoughtful with your gifts, and that will always provide a better gift-giving experience, I think.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Oh, my goodness. Well, so much to look forward to. I'm glad we're back. Sorry for the vacations and the chaos, but I just want to let everybody know you can always support us at patreon.com/grills. We want to thank all of our patrons. You guys are awesome. You are making it possible for us to continue our podcast. Your feedback is always welcome. And we do have some codes to give away to the next few listeners that sign up on Patreon. So for a list of those game codes that are available, you can check out our website at geekgirls.com. Also, if you don't have any moolah to support us financially, you can always do an iTunes review. Those reviews are free, and they also help us show up in iTunes. So definitely help us out there.
You could also tweet us at Geek Grills. That would be nice. Please don't. I think the more interaction, the better. We love hearing from you. So where can we find you, Grills, on the interwebs?
Easiest place to find me is on Twitter at Chris Van Pelt, KRISVANPELT. And I've got some ideas of trying to restart my YouTube channel. I'm kind of trying to start a new gaming geeky channel, but I've got a ton of videos on an old channel that is like all of my Extra Life videos from the past. So I'm trying to see about connecting the two. So when that happens, if that is able to happen, I'll let you guys know and I'll share that channel with
you. Awesome. And you can find me at The Jen Says on Twitter and streaming at twitch.tv/TheJenPlays. Hopefully I can get my streaming going back up in the next couple weeks now that I'm back home from all of my vacations.
Right on. Well, I can be reached at 9 of 12 on Twitter, and you can hear me on the Part-Time Gamers podcast. Thanks for listening, everyone. Good game.
Good game.
If you enjoyed this show and have the quill skill to shriek speech, leave us a 5-star unique critique on iTunes or thrill us with the size of your handbill by spilling goodwill into our tills at patreon.com/grills. We can also be found windmilling around Facebook and YouTube at facebook.com/geekgrills and youtube.com/geekgrills, where we like to chill. Tweet your siren songs where the throngs belong on Twitter at geekgrills, where we're dressed to kill. For more info on the show, though, go to geekgrills.com, where you can find previous episodes, show notes, and current contest information. Send us your psalms and qualms to geekgrills@gmail.com or give us a ring at 508-474-5577, where we can hear your lovely voice sing the zing thing. Thanks for listening.